welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Liz Loza, joined all season long on Fridays by my good friend Dalton Del Don. Today, we'll be doing a fantasy preview of each Sunday game for week four of the NFL season. But first, you know, we got to get through a little of this pre-show business. You, dear listeners, are here for fantasy advice, and we are here to provide it to you. And while we'll do plenty of that in today's episode, what can really help your team is Yahoo Fantasy Plus. Between the Trade Hub, the Research Assistant, and, oh my goodness, Andy Barron's weekly newsletter. Let me tell you, he puts so much time and effort into that thing. I am lucky that I get to receive it. You all, with all of these things, will be super equipped with the best league-specific fantasy advice that money can buy. And speaking of money, you can try out Fantasy Plus for free at yahoofantasyfootball.com/plus. Dalton, are you feeling a little plus today? You feeling a little extra heading into the week four portion, the first month almost we're through of this 2021 season?
Man, busy times, huh, Liz? Yeah, season's going by fast, but yet there's still so much more to it. But here we are. How are your team? How are your fantasy teams doing?
Yo, my teams are crushing, to be honest. I mean, save the one league that, yeah, I won everywhere last week, except for the league that you and I are in together, where I lost both Christian McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook and everyone who's listening. It's an auction league, which is why I was able to roster both of those players.
Well, that's good to hear. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm hit and miss my fantasy teams. I'm most excited about my daughter winning her cross-country meet, and that's amazing. Yeah. I've even waited this long to talk about it because it's my last podcast of the week, so I will stop being insufferable. But that's what I've been most excited about.
I think that's great. I think it's also awesome that you and Andy, but his daughter, who's, you know, in college now, is also a cross-country star. If we're going to brag about our kids, if I may for just one second, my son, who's in Little League, this is his first year of kid pitch, not coach pitch, pitched his first strike out last week, which was the first game of the season. So we're both proud, annoying, awesome, insufferable parents. Yeah. Maybe we'll do a parenting pod that we keep talking about.
Yeah. Made up for that Sunday night game I had to sit through as a Niner fan, man. We talked about how you like Rodgers, man. I'm just so jealous. I don't have that guy as my quarterback. The swag out there with the long hair. Just so pretty watching him and Adams play catch in person. I mean, it was frustrating. The whole stadium knew where it was going and no one could stop it, man. That was an exciting, fun game.
Well, Aaron certainly got romantic over the game, yes, that evening, but I am feeling some warm, kind of romantic feelings about one Taylor Heinicke, even if he didn't perform. We saw a lot of Tyler, not Taylor Heinicke, in week three, but I really like his matchup at Atlanta this weekend. Let's talk about it. I have him, I know that you're really high, no spoiler alerts, but a little bit of one, on Sam Darnold this week. I have Heinicke and Darnold very close in my ranks because I think they could be two big surprises. But Heinicke is the one that's being overlooked. I mean, even with last week's performance, he still put in a top 12 fantasy performance, 21 rushing yards. Oh my goodness, Daniel Jones, who we all thought would smash in Atlanta in week three, underwhelmed, but his whole receiving core was hurt. We'll talk about an update on those wide receivers in New York as well. He still managed to rush for over 30 yards, though. The Falcons have yet to force a single interception. I think Heinicke has top 15 potential, and he's only $26 in our daily game.
Obviously, you don't love the picks in real life, but it helped his fantasy numbers last week. 8.8 YPA in Buffalo, and you said the rushing stats. The Falcons rank, I think, bottom three in defense DVOA to open the year, so the matchup is fine. They're actually a tough team. They're actually a pass-funnel defense. They allowed the second fewest rushing yards to running backs last year, and you're talking about a game indoors, so I'm with you on Heinicke. Conversely, I'm so just frustrated with Arthur Smith turning Matt Ryan into – he's the only quarterback in the NFL yet to complete a pass 20 yards downfield. His intended air yards are like three and a half yards fewer than his career. Yeah, it's just been disappointing as a Kyle Pitts guy, and I ranked Calvin Ridley so aggressive. Yeah, it's been very disappointing, Falcons. I believe they ranked dead last in offense DVOA.
Well, let's talk about Kyle Pitts because I have him in my notes. He's only $16 in our DFS game. I put him in my expert lineup because if not now, then when, Dalton? It's not like we're not seeing him out there. This is not like, oh, he's blocking. No, he's run 101 routes. That's the tight end two for that category. He is running more routes than George Kittle, than Mark Andrews. He is up there doing the thing, and yet we're not seeing any production. I mean, if it doesn't happen now, I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
And Smith has taken him out in these red zone opportunities at times. It's been so weird. I thought he was hiding him in the preseason to unleash him, you know, but mm-hmm. it's kind of just been, he continued to hide him. But it's so weird too, after passing on a couple of possible franchise quarterbacks to take the tight end. But I'm with you as far as still going back to him. I did the tight ends in the Fearless Forecast this week, and I put him in the top 10. Still, you have to, with all those routes running. And he's still a special unicorn talent, capable of really, you know, busting out any of these weeks. So I'm sticking with Pitts, as frustrating as it's been. Mike Davis on Fantasy Pros ECR keeps telling me I'm ranking him too low. I guess he's like consensus is top 25 back still. To me, that, I don't know, it seems weird to me. CPAT has been equal to him. So I don't know. I don't love starting Mike Davis as much as apparently the expert community does.
Yeah, I think everybody is just sort of wait. Well, I definitely don't like either of them, frankly. Definitely not Mike Davis in this matchup, right? Like, outside of the top, he's an RB3 if we're facing the Washington defense. And even while the football team has not, their defense at least has not, like, played up to expectation, that front is still tough for opposing rushers, especially ones that are as sluggish as Mike Davis.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's what I'm saying. It seems like too aggressive a ranking to me. I don't love the matchup here. Washington's had some tough matchups, but certainly not been the defense we expected. But, yeah, I believe it when I see it, when Atlanta needs to turn it around, because it's been about as ugly as it gets, this team.
Well, if the defense in Washington is not playing to expectation, the defense in Buffalo is exceeding expectation. They have been absolutely lit all season long, except for that weird week one that feels like so anomalistic against Pittsburgh. But this week they are hosting the Houston Texans. I mean, you have to imagine that this is a massive smash spot for every piece of the Bills offense. Stephon Diggs, by the way, is the wide receiver 28 overall in fantasy right now, which is interesting considering he was drafted so high by fantasy managers and ended 2020 as the wide receiver 3 overall. But there are more mouths to feed in Buffalo, and so he's just not seeing the same sort of volume, not just volume overall, but some of those high value opportunities aren't just automatically going his way. I do think he can find the end zone this week, but I don't really think he'll catch more than 5 balls, because the Bills are favored by, I think, 7 more than that. How much are they favored? They're favored by 17 points. Yeah. Like, this is going to be a Zach Moss game.
Yeah, I mean, what you could definitely talk yourself into the game script just leading to so few pass attempts in the second half. But then you could also counter and say it's okay to bet on a passing attack that, in which the team has one of the highest implied team totals this week. So they will score. If they put up 4 or 5 touchdowns and sit out the final quarter, well, you think you banked some stats. But I'm with you as far as Zach Moss and Devin Singletary being interesting flex spots, or maybe even in DFS this week, because the game script does, you know, call for them maybe not being so pass heavy as usual, playing with a big lead with Davis Mills, you know, QBing Houston. So I do think overall Steph Diggs is a buy low, though. I mean, I think he's going to be just fine moving forward, even if not ideal, with now Emmanuel Sanders taking more targets and Beasley remaining a target hog as well. But yeah, this one should be an easy win for the Bills, which could result in a lot more rushing attempts over the second half of the game.
We're also seeing Dawson Knox be more used in the red area of the field. I mean, he scored in back-to-back weeks. He's on my sleeper list this week. I'm sure that that's probably a pretty popular pick for a sleeper. I hate chasing touchdowns, but like you said, when you're attached to Josh Allen and you're part of such a high-volume passing attack, you want as many pieces of that offense as possible, particularly at such a spot that's as volatile as tight end. So it remains to be seen. I think the three pieces of this offense outside of Josh Allen that I'm most interested in this week, though, are going to be Diggs, Knox, and Moss. Let's talk about Houston, though, because Brandon Cooks continue. Like, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It doesn't matter what uniform he's wearing. This guy puts up 1,000-yard receiving season after season. But his matchup this week against Tre'Davious White is very tricky. Here's a fun fact. White has held each wide receiver 1 to 3 catches in his coverage so far this season. And those wide receivers include, obviously, Deontay Johnson, Devonta Parker, and Terry McLaurin last week. So is Cooks going to continue to buck the trend and be worthy of a flex spot for you given the matchup?
Yeah, he's definitely worthy of a flex spot, just given the opportunity. I mean, he ranks number 1 in WAPR. That's weighted opportunity rating when you combine the team share of air yards. I mean, basically just no wide receiver in football is getting more opportunity to open the air than Cooks. You hate the matchup. You don't love the quarterback, but he's number 6, even in just half PPR leagues, number six wide receiver to open the year. So I split the difference, and I think he's like my number 19 wide receiver this week. So yeah, you hate the matchup, so you can't treat him as a wide receiver one. But man, given that volume, he's still a wide receiver two for me. I mean, there's no one else they're throwing it to.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Last week, I benched him in favor of Michael Pittman in my flex. Ended up squeaking it out, but learned my lesson catching 9 balls on a Thursday night game. 9 balls back-to-back, by the way. With Davis Mills passing, I think you have to just kind of like, squint and put him in and trust that the volume will lean in your direction. Detroit at Chicago. Well, you want to talk about volume? Here's the opposite. Of volume. I mean, a volume of heartbreak, I suppose, but that's about it. Lots of questions at quarterback. Obviously, that's the place we're going to start here. Matt Nagy came out earlier this week and said that Andy Dalton would still be the starter if he were healthy. Great, great, great. Maybe that's because he hasn't bothered to figure out a game plan for the rookie that fell into his lap and was a gift to the city. The first maybe solid quarterback since Sid Luckman. I'm not counting Jim McMahon, but whatever, no big deal. He needs more time to figure out how to use him properly. Andy Dalton was limited in practice, still dealing with that knee injury, but did practice at some capacity. Justin Fields, who's dealing with the hand issue, thank you again, Matt Nagy, full practice. So I don't really know what to make of this. All I do know, outside of a fanned perspective, is that Allen Robinson has only caught 4 balls over the last 2 weeks total, and he has yet to clear more than 35 yards. And that was way back in week 1 when we thought, like, oh, Jalen Ramsey's probably tough coverage.
Yeah, it's a concern to quarterback play, to say the least. Poor Allen Robinson, his whole career. But, I mean, did Fields really get, was it 1 net passing yard when you factor in
1.1. It was 1.1.
I mean, it's just pretty horrific. But it's a nice landing spot to get the Lions defense, maybe the softest one possible. No one will want to use Montgomery in DFS, but I wrote about him in my DFS column, both him and Swift in this game. I think one's 21 and Swift is 16. Their salaries are totally affordable. The Lions defense has been really, really bad. I don't know. Can you make of the quarterback situation? What is your prediction? Who starts this week in Chicago?
I mean, it's really hard not to imagine that David Montgomery and the matchup and the volume won't see something, right? Like, I have him as a low-end RB1. Let's imagine that RB11 to 13 space, I think, is probably where I'd put him. And as for Swift, like, I have Swift very similarly ranked, you know? In fact, I'm seeing in our consensus ranks that either people have Swift slightly ahead or Monty slightly ahead, but usually by the same number of ranks. Obviously, Swift is seeing a ton of production through the air, and we know he's an excellent pass catcher, was in college. He's working as the team's wide receiver one. So in PPR-friendly formats, I'm going to give it to Swift. And in standard, like, no PPR at all leagues, then Monty and the goal line would have the edge.
Swift is so good. I'm pretty much ranking him top 10 every week moving forward. Even Dan Campbell came out and said he's going to be getting a lot more touches. You worry about the injury concern moving forward. You don't love the offensive environment, but man, the targets and the high value touches. I mean, he's getting the goal line and all the targets. And he's so good too. So yeah, I mean, Swift at $16. That's just simply going to go. It's going to move way up moving forward.
Carolina at Dallas. Now you are, if I am high on Taylor Heinicke, you are high, if not higher, on Sam Darnold. Tell the world why.
Sure. So you get an 8.3 YPA post Adam Gase. This game's indoors, a high over under, 51.5 points. No CMC. You could argue that also doesn't help them move the chains, but you'd think the Panthers are going to have to pass more than they have to open the year, probably playing from behind. So, DJ Moore. DJ Moore will have to get Trevon Diggs this game, but maybe Robbie Anderson breaks out. Darnold, I think he's moderately priced in DFS, and he can run a little. So I think he's going to force him to pass more than usual, so he can be like a top 15 fantasy QB this week.
I dig it. Let's talk about Robbie Anderson, because he's been the source of a lot of agita for fantasy managers, myself included. I talked about this with Chris Harris on the Harris Football Podcast. Like, there's nothing that I can see that Robbie Anderson is doing wrong. He's just not getting the ball, you know? Like, he's not missing assignments. He's not running bad routes. He's just not involved. And there were reports earlier this week that Matt Rhule said they were going to have to focus on getting him more involved. Now, obviously, it's not just CMC that Carolina will be without. Sam Darnold is also going to be without his tight end, Dan Arnold, whom he had showed a considerable amount of chemistry for, because Arnold got traded for CJ Anderson in Jacksonville to replace JC Horn at cornerback. So there should be more targets available, especially if the Cowboys are 4.5-point favorites and Darnold is going to have to push and chase points. I also think there's an opportunity here for Terrace Marshall, who's seeing more target volume and a larger target share than Robbie Anderson, because Jordan Lewis, who is the Cowboys slot cornerback, like, hasn't been great. He's allowing a passer rating of above 113%. So I think maybe all three receivers could get involved in this particular matchup with such a high over under 51.5.
Yeah, I think Anderson is a sleeper this week with no CMC. Diggs may shadow Moore. Diggs really has been shadowing. Yep. And I love Moore moving forward as a top 10 guy. He looks like a true alpha breakout. But Anderson, it's been disappointing that they haven't had the rapport of his old quarterback right away. But you read more into it, and it's like, oh, he just missed here and there, and they're working on the chemistry will come. And yeah, I think this week, why not now? Indoors, should have to pass more than usual. And Diggs may just be totally blanketing Moore. So if not Terrace Marshall or Robbie Anderson, I'd be surprised if one of the two doesn't break out.
Believe in yourself, Trayvon. Let's talk about Dallas. Amari Cooper. Well, you know what? Actually, Amari Cooper is like kind of a mystery, but I think the reason he's been a mystery is that in week one, we saw the Kellen Moore experience fully unleashed, right? High volume passing. And then over the past 2 weeks, you've seen McCarthy kind of stick his finger in the sauce and be like, nah, 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 y'all, we got to run. Look at how much we got this running back tandem. One is explosive, catches balls. The other one's a bulldozer and does all the things. And by the way, oh, we paid him a bunch of money. And over the past 2 weeks, we're not quite seeing Dallas return to that like high-powered, throw the ball all over the yard sort of look. I think that is affecting the wide receivers here. Are you imagining, especially in a matchup where they're favored, for that to continue?
Yeah, weeks 2 and 3, I think Dak threw the ball basically comparable to how many the amount he threw week one. I'm not sure which was going to be more true moving forward. But Carolina's a tough team to run against. There's no Michael Gallup. It feels like kind of fluky how the tight ends have gotten so involved in last week's game script was so weird with the Eagles. I'm firing up CeeDee Lamb and Cooper with confidence this week. I think they do bounce back. The targets return. Carolina's defense is most susceptible out there, and they lost JC Horn too last week. So I like Lamb and Cooper to bounce back. They have big home road splits too, typically in the past. I mean, not that they haven't been getting it done on the road this year, but in the past, Dak has just been unreal at home. So I like CeeDee Lamb and I like Amari Cooper quite a bit this week.
I think that's a good call, mentioning the home road splits. I have Cooper. I did wide receivers for my Fearless Forecast this week. So I think Cooper flirts with 70 yards, but I'm not quite sure he finds the end zone. That's still better, by the way, than his 6 balls for a total of 50 yards over the past 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah, he's playing with tender ribs, I guess, could be pointed out. You know, we don't know how much that's affecting him. You know, right. Was it just a lack of looks, or was he, you know, more of a decoy because of those tender ribs?
Let's talk about Indianapolis at Miami. I mean, could there be a less exciting, by the way, matchup on the books? Like, I saw this one. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I guess we should talk about Jonathan Taylor. Marlon Mack's name is in the news. The Colts have, like, agreed to trade him, which I don't think affects Taylor, frankly. I think it affects Hines, and it's why you didn't see Nyheim Hines in week two do as much damage. But Hines remains very much involved. I know you're super bullish on Taylor, and I'm imagining you're going to continue to be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm discouraged. I really like Jonathan Taylor, the player. Quentin Nelson is out. Indies just refuses to play its best players. There's a huge downgrade at quarterback, clearly, with especially a banged up Wentz. I do not think Jonathan Taylor is going to be a fantasy bust, but I'm not as high on him as I was before the season. He could have a big game here, though. It's totally possible. Conversely, though, the Dolphins, just $12. There's a lot of interesting lower-priced defenses this week. And at home against that, you know, mess of a quarterback situation with the injuries on the offensive line, I could see Miami being a sneaky defense. They're top 7 in DVOA this year. So, like them. And then Gesicki ran a ton more routes last week and is suddenly an option in a real thin tight end position. But I'm with you. This is a really boring game. And not much to talk about. You know that Nyheim Hines has actually outscored Jonathan Taylor in PPR leagues through 3 weeks, which is just, you know, not ideal.
Taylor had, I think, 6 catches in week one, but only 1 catch apiece over the past 2 weeks. And it's Hines who's continued to, I mean, Reich likes him, right? Like, Reich's never getting rid of him. And I think, frankly, the bad ankles that Wentz is dealing with is only going to contribute to more targets for Hines, because he's just, lacking even more mobility and needs to check down and get the ball out, especially if his center isn't available, you know?
Yeah, no, I can see more of it. Hines is definitely here to stay. You're totally. They gave him the contract too. So yeah, it's going to be a problem for those with Taylor for the rest of the year too, for sure.
That means Hines is like a solid flex in PPR friendly format. Absolutely. Every single week you can't sit him. So let's talk about Miami, because there are a couple of interesting wrinkles happening, and obviously all without Tua Tagovailoa. Will Fuller did not practice on Wednesday. He's dealing with chest and elbow issues, but he did return to practice on Thursday. So we'll see as the week evolves, like what kind of involvement we're expecting from him. I think, and I said this on Sunday night's pod, the most encouraging thing is that while Jalen Waddle's usage is certainly curious, like you don't expect this speedy potential deep threat to work as like a sure-handed slot guy whose longest completion was like 9 yards, right? That's a little bit confounding, but we'll take the volume. He's working even as a rookie with the backup quarterback with whom he doesn't have a relationship, is working as the team's number one in terms of target opportunity. So I like, do I think he catches 6 balls in this game? Yeah. Do I think it's for 100 yards? Nope. Maybe half that.
Yeah, 13 targets last week keeps Waddle on the flex radar, but it's just a problem as long as Jacoby Brissett is starting for Miami. What was his YPA last week? It was ugly, 4.4 or something. So ideally, Tua gets back sooner rather than later before you're relying on any pass catchers in Miami. But yeah, Waddle, I mean, 13 targets. Yeah, he's just glory. Yeah, I mean, not a bad PPR flex option for sure.
No, it's just weird to see Jalen Waddle like working as Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, very odd. Yeah, not ideal fit.
Super peculiar. And speaking of Jarvis Landry, let's talk about Cleveland at Minnesota. Landry obviously on IR, not available for this matchup, but OBJ is. He, by the way, is only $27 in Yahoo DFS. I think we are both on the same page about him. We both have him ranked more aggressively than the rest of the crew. He converted 5 of 9 for 77 yards last week and came like super close to a touchdown. We're rolling with him. I think he's easily a wide receiver 3, even if people are skittish because he's OBJ, but he could definitely work as like a mid-range wide receiver 2 as well.
Oh yeah, I have him top 20 this week. I mean, no guarantee that knee won't flare up moving forward or whatever, but indoors and the high over-under here, no Landry. Yeah, I think a lot of points are going to be scored. He looked good last week, and he actually had a real high target share for and a share of his team yards and whatnot. So I'm in on Beckham. He looked good, and again, he could go down, and I have no promises health-wise moving forward. But for this week and this matchup, I really like him as a top 20 fantasy wideout.
And I think as long as Matt and I talked about this on Sunday night as well, as long as Jarvis Landry is out, you're going to see those short range targets go more to Kareem Hunt, which bolsters his stock and makes him a nice flex as well.
Hunt, I keep saying like, it's tough to start because of the latter half of the committee, but he gets it done continuously.
On the Minnesota side of things, Dalvin Cook was limited in practice on Wednesday and Thursday, but he did participate, so that's good. And I think the assumption is that at least at the time of this recording on Thursday afternoon, he is expected to play. If he does, he's like an RB2 or RB3 for the week. I don't think anyone's blinking. He's the second most expensive running back in Yahoo's daily game. If he's not, then you're going to play Alexander Mattison, who last week in the stead of Cook was a top 10 play, 26 carries for 112 yards. I'm pretty sure fantasy managers, at least anyone who is regularly listening to any of the fantasy football forecast podcasts, knows the deal here.
Yeah, just fire up whoever's starting. If Cook is inactive, go ahead and start Mattison with confidence. And if Cook's active, you got to play him. I mean, it's not ideal. He's 100%, but obviously, yeah. I mean, he's so good when out there. So, yeah, it just comes down to health here.
On Sunday, the Saints will return to the Superdome, and they will be hosting the Giants. Now, how many members of the Giants offense travel with the team will be interesting. Sterling Shepard did not practice on Wednesday or Thursday. He's still dealing with that hamstring injury that he suffered in-game on Sunday. Same for Darius Slayton, did not practice on Wednesday or Thursday, also hamstring. Galladay is limited on Thursday, still with that hip injury that was being managed on Sunday. He was in and out of the game with the hip injury. That's going to be all year until he gets the surgery. I keep saying it. Fine. Evan Ingram made his return last Sunday, but caught 2 balls out of 6 for 21. Oh, and he had a nice fumble. That happened too. And by nice, I mean costly. And Saquon Barkley, who did look better, much better against Atlanta, had himself a gorgeous touchdown, is facing the Saints defense. So, womp womp, don't like that either.
Yeah, there's no starts you absolutely love here at all. It's frustrating that Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton both leaving early in that game, too. And you can't rely on Golladay, who's still probably looking at limited snaps. So, boy, it's tough to do, but I kind of want to recommend Evan Engram at just $12 because there's few tight ends looking at that volume. He's such a disappointment, though. But with those receivers, if they're, you know, if two of those three are inactive, I mean, I guess you gotta he becomes an option if you're looking to go cheap at the position. But man, he's been a total disaster for sure.
I mean, there's part of me that was almost considering Kyle Rudolph ahead of Engram because Engram's still clearly shaking off rust. But you have to imagine against this front in New Orleans, Rudolph's going to be blocking a ton.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to run against them successfully. And if there's no Shepard, Slayton, and a limited Golladay, I mean, even by default, Engram might look at double-digit targets. Now, I can't promise he'll do anything with them, but the volume should be there.
Over under 2.5 fumbles for Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I know, because that New Orleans defense is good. Kamara said just throw out that one week with all the coaches were on the COVID list. Otherwise, they've been great. And as you said, return to New Orleans indoors for the first time, full capacity. Probably go under 2.5, yeah, he probably will fumble twice. You're right.
I set an aggressive line. Let's talk about New Orleans. I think obviously, you know, Alvin is in a smash spot right here after we just talked about the horrors that the Giants offense is facing. But what about Marquez Callaway? You know, New Orleans offense still remains very much a mystery to me.
Yeah, it's super weird because the volume's been so low. I could see if you really need a flex help, I could see Callaway as disappointing as he's been. I could also see him being dropped already from a lot of the teams that have been so disappointed. So he still appears to be their number one. And, you know, Michael Thomas isn't back yet, nor is Tre'Quan Smith. So yeah, if you could, I mean, Callaway, you wouldn't feel great about it, but I mean, I could see it.
I feel like if you're in a 14-team league, of which you and I are both in a lot right. of, and you have a mandatory start three wide receivers and then multiple flexes, there's a world in which he makes it. Like, he's probably a top 50-ish wide receiver, and so he makes it into, like, a low-end flex position because he is the wide receiver one, even though you're not expecting a ton of volume in this matchup. But, you know, if he catches three balls and one's in the end zone, I don't like chasing touchdowns, but here you go. Like, there's an argument. You can see that happen. It's in the range of possible outcomes, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, I just looked at him as my wide receiver 51. So, yeah, it makes sense. Deeper leagues, he's a possible option. Wild that Derrick Henry has more catches than Alvin Kamara to open the season.
Oh, that is an interesting stat, and it's the perfect segue because we're going to talk about Tennessee at the Jets right now. Derrick Henry, let's start with him. We definitely should. He is the highest-priced running back in our daily game, and for good reason. He's $41. But listen, the rest of Tennessee is kind of a mess. A.J. Brown likely out again with the hamstring injury. He was sidelined from practice on Thursday. Julio Jones, we found out the answer to the mystery. Why didn't Julio Jones with A.J. Brown out of the contest see the field for the bulk of the second half last week? Oh, he was hurt. He's also dealing with a hamstring injury. He was also sidelined on practice. He was sidelined from practice on Thursday. So now we've got Derrick Henry and this Nicholas something or other rookie and Chester Rogers.
Yeah, I guess Nick Westbrook, Akini, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's a real deep sleeper this week because of all the injuries, as you mentioned. And Derrick Henry, just the clear number one fantasy back moving forward, getting the targets this year. He has 63 carries the last 2 weeks. The next closest has 38. I mean, he's just the team's entire offense, and that's before they lost both their receivers. So, yeah, I mean, Derrick Henry is just, you're happy if you have him on your fantasy team. As I said, more catches than Alvin Kamara even. So, otherwise, I mean, this offense, Tennessee, is so many injuries. What are you going to do? Do you have any particular sleeper you like as far as the pass catchers?
No. I think the Nicholas Akiyemi Westbrook fellow I don't feel comfortable rolling him out because I think there is a very likely scenario where Derrick Henry just eats everything. And so you won't need to. But I will say that the Jets have been given a slight break. Like, karmically, they may not feel like it's enough because they've been dealt a pretty tough hand to start the season. But if they were going to take on the Titans, whose pass defense in particular and secondary is not particularly stout, And they aren't going to be able to play catch up in the same way against the Jets. And here is an opportunity for Zach Wilson to at least maybe keep things semi-close, right? Like, I don't, if you want a super deep sleeper for me, it's always tough to get running back sleepers because there are so few of them. But I do think Michael Carter could do something in this matchup because of all of the injuries in Tennessee. And even though Tennessee is easier to beat via the air than they are on the ground, Carter has managed to climb his way up the depth chart. Tevin Coleman, like, it doesn't matter if he's out with a non-COVID related illness or not. He's not a factor. And Michael Carter is playing ahead of Ty Johnson, who I know you liked heading into the season. So I do think at the top, at least in the first quarter, with those young legs, in an attempt to play keep away, there might be some opportunities. And then he might also just be able to get himself a goal line grab. And I also think Corey Davis is probably going to see a lot of volume. And since he's not playing Belichick this week, he'll be able to convert on a decent number of those looks.
Yeah, the Jets have played an extremely tough schedule. They're at home. The Titans do not have a good defense. All those injuries. I really like Corey Davis this week in this matchup. I think there's an upset chance here. I would personally avoid Tennessee in survivor pools. Zach Wilson's been really, really ugly. But again, the matchups have been so tough, and I think it eases up here. And again, I think the Jets are a live dog in this matchup, and I would fire up Corey Davis.
Yeah, we're in the same boat then. I feel like this is going to be a trap for a lot of people. I love that you mentioned the survivor pool. So we're in agreement. Kansas City has dropped the last two games in a row, which is, I think, surprising to a lot of people. Meanwhile, the Raiders and the Broncos, I believe, are both 3-0. Wild in the AFC West. But the Chiefs are traveling to take on the Eagles, the over-under, as they are in most Chiefs matchups or most games featuring the Chiefs, is pretty high at 54.5. I am going to ask you, even though Josh Gordon, we have to talk about it, even though he's probably not going to be active this week per Andy Reid, how much fat did you spend on him?
I actually didn't go very aggressively. Maybe I'll regret it. No, I actually don't have him anywhere. I actually don't. I saw some people spend quite a bit. It's been so long. I could see it, though. I mean, I'm rooting for Josh Gordon for sure. I hope he balls out. I'd love it. But I actually did not. I did not go too aggressive. Did you, Liz?
No, I didn't. I mean, to be honest, I was too busy working on Tuesday and missed waivers this week.
Yeah. That might be part of my problem, too, is it's the life getting too. But I know it feels like someone I've hyped in the past, no question about it. And I love Josh Gordon, and he's in the best, now he's in the Chiefs offense. So he's certainly on the fantasy radar. I get it. But expectations need to be obviously held in check here.
Did you put in any money for him? Any bids?
I did not win. It was not enough because I know that I end up with him on none, but it was very mod. It was not enough, but I don't have, and in fairness, I don't have a ton of fab left after blowing it all on Elijah Mitchell.
It's a very good point. It's a very good point. I mean, I think this pickup by the Chiefs makes a lot of sense because defenses have keyed in on Tyreek Hill over the past 2 weeks. And what do you know? They've lost the past 2 weeks. My friend and co-host Austin Eckler, who obviously has very recent familiarity with the Chiefs as of last week, said that, Tyreek Hill has a giant target on his back. Defenses now know what he's going to do, and they're going to put all of their efforts into stopping him. If you put Josh Gordon on the field with Sammy Watkins no longer available, that at least spreads things out a little bit. That is a question mark that defenses probably feel, or at least the Chiefs feel, they'll need to account for, and it should free up Hill a little bit more. Now, I do think in this matchup at Philadelphia, where the Eagles have just been, we saw them on primetime, right? Like, not impressive. I think there's an opportunity here for Hill to get loose. I'm not sure he finds the end zone, but I do think he flirts with 100 yards.
It's an indictment on Mecole Hardman, too. The signing of Gordon, because it's not been able to take, it's just not really taking it, advantage of his new situation. Weird, funny stat. Last week, the Eagles had the fewest carries by a running back in a game in NFL history. And now this week, And now, yeah, two. And then this week they get a KC run defense that ranks last in DVOA. Well, actually last in both rush defense and pass defense DVOA, which is tough to do. Conversely, Carolina somehow ranks first in both pass and rush DVOA defense. But KC's just been a disaster defensively. Obviously, we saw Philadelphia struggle offensively. So we'll see what last week. So we'll see what happens. I kind of like Devontae Smith to break out here and maybe cash in some of those unrealized air yards in this matchup.
100% agree with you. Devonta Smith is $17 in Yahoo DFS, and he won't have Trayvon Diggs, his former college teammate, bothering him. We talked about Diggs when we featured the Dallas matchup. Also, Jalen Reagor, who's seen five targets in every single game so far this season, had a couple almost touchdowns. He is $16. So I like either of those options in DFS, especially if you're trying to pay up to get Derrick Henry or, you know, Patrick Mahomes, who's the most expensive quarterback this week. I think there's some variance here. And you mentioned Miles Sanders. I agree with you, only two carries. This should be a situation in which he bounces back. I still have him ranked inside my top 20.
Yeah, me too. And especially coming off last week, they'll counter that with giving him more. And theoretically, they want to keep Mahomes off the field and run the clock and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm using Sanders this week in this matchup for sure.
As our friend Vlad Sedler says, buy the dip, buy the dip. Arizona at Los Angeles, you know, everybody bought Rondale Moore, but he was the one who dipped. It did not work out. Just a reminder for everybody, he is the fourth wide receiver on this squad. He is number four in terms of snaps and in terms of routes run per game. I just wanted to everyone keeps saying this, but I wanted to contextualize it for our listeners. So I looked up the numbers and Moore is running about 14 routes per game. Compare that to AJ Green. Yes, the guy that you all think is washed is running 29 routes per game. So that is nearly half as many as AJ Green. So just a reminder when we're putting Moore in our lineups, I know we want to chase points. I know he's got upside, but you got to remember the roster construction and balance when you're setting those lineups. Regardless, this should be another high scoring game. 55 is the over under. You've got Nuke, who's been dealing with that rib injury, returning to practice on Thursday. You also have Daryl Henderson on the Rams side of things, also dealing a lot of rib issues right now. Yeah. He participated in practice. McVay isn't saying 100% that Henderson will be active, but the expectation is for him to play.
So Rondale Moore, yeah, boomer bust with that deep speed type. I really like Christian Kirk is getting better. And DeAndre Hopkins is surprisingly ranks fourth on the Cardinals in targets to open the year. Obviously, partially a health issue, and he had the big week one. For the Rams, Arizona defense definitely improved this year, but they've struggled against the run. So it's just a health issue. You're starting Henderson or Sony Michel. Don't forget, Michel faced a really tough Tampa Bay run defense last week. So he got all the touches. Jake Funk got like one or something. So Michel absolutely can be fantasy valuable moving forward during the weeks in which Daryl Henderson inevitably misses games. And Cooper Kupp, I'm just so...
Sorry to interrupt, but which of them... I mean, if Henderson plays, the assumption is, right, that Henderson will see the larger bulk of the work. But if Henderson is hampered, and McVay has spoken openly ahead of the season before Michelle was added, after Cam Akers went down, that his biggest concern was Henderson's durability, not his talent, you have to imagine that he'll be managed in some way. This isn't like Sony Michel isn't disappearing now.
Yeah, there's also some concern with the hurt ribs, but McVay typically just treats his lead back like a lead back whenever they're available. So I would definitely be starting Henderson if he's active and just expect him to be treated mostly like a workhorse and then just wait for Michelle whenever Henderson's inactive. But I could be wrong. That could delve into more of a committee in an effort to keep Henderson healthy, and that wouldn't be ideal. But that's my hope, and that's how I'm treating him moving forward. And I'm so jealous of not having more Cooper Kupp, because this isn't just been some fluke or whatever. I mean, obviously the target percentage is not going to be 40%, but the rapport he has with Stafford, and they're just like staying after practice, and it's ridiculous. And it's obviously McVay's mind, and now Stafford at QB and Kupp there. He's the minimum. He's the number two fantasy wide receiver moving forward.
What are you doing with Robert Woods, especially when you see this many points available in a matchup?
Yeah, I can't figure him out either. I guess it just depends on my alternatives, but I'm certainly concerned. I mean, Van Jefferson's running the similar amount of routes and he's just so far behind Cup, but I wouldn't be shocked if he also has a really good game and everyone says relax. So you're probably rolling with Woods, but honestly, you don't feel great about it. I mean, it's not ideal. Sometimes you're more worried about process and production. And this is one of those times you look at Van Jefferson also running the routes and it's like, this may not be a total fluke and just a bad luck situation, but at the same time, he's been so good in the past and the Rams have been so effective. Do you have a strong take on Woods?
I don't have a strong take. I mean, I've been trying to figure out a reason. Like, I went back and watched highlights from this game. And I think the truth is that Stafford has this really strong arm and he has tons of time. They've done a great job with that offensive line. And he has a play caller who, you know, likes to be aggro unless he's in the playoffs. So you don't have to worry about the screens and the slants that Jared Goff was utilizing last year right. And that Robert Woods benefited from, right? Because he can just chuck it up and let Cooper Kupp fly after the catch or let DeSean Jackson do his top off the defense thing or Van Jefferson who profiles similarly to D-Jax. And you just don't need to dink and dunk the way that Jared Goff needed to. Matt Stafford just doesn't freak out to the same level. And he can work through his progressions in without having McVay up in his ear as much, you know? And I think that because of that, it's almost like Stafford is so good that he doesn't need a player as reliable as Woods. He can just let it run, let it cut it and YOLO ball it a little bit more. And so you're not seeing Woods get the production. I think you're praying for a touchdown, frankly, when you see a matchup this. Like, I don't think that Woods clears 5 catches, but I do think maybe he finds the end zone when I see a over under of 55. And I think I'm not scared of the Cardinals secondary. And I know that Woods has is a physical receiver. So that's what I think you have to move him to wide receiver 3 territory.
Yeah, ironically, the better quarterback is hurt his fantasy value. I'm with you as wide receiver 3. Yeah, you said it, a 55.5-point over-under, in which they're 4.5-point favorites at home. So they're going to score points. So he's still a flex option there. But, man, a couple more weeks of that, and you could, you're going to have to consider the bench. But, man, Cooper Kupp, monster.
Monster, for sure. All right, let's talk about Seattle at San Francisco, another NFC West showdown. All of the NFC West is playing each other this week. That's interesting. This matchup features your team, the 49ers. The over-under is 51.5, so you expect there'll be a lot of fantasy gold here. And I am anticipating that maybe you're feeling a lot better about one Brandon Ayuk. I know I will say at $15, I put him in my expert DFS lineup. But just for the people listening, we're watching Ayuk grow into this offense. Over the past 3 weeks, week 1, 48% snap share. Week 2, 55% snap share. Week 3, 86% snap share. Routes run, I would say a more important or more indicative stat to his involvement. Week 1, 12 routes. Week 2, 15 routes. Week 3, 39 routes plus 3 red zone looks. How you feeling about Brandon Ayuk now?
Yeah, he was second in looks inside the 5 last year behind only Davante Adams. So they do like getting him in the red area. This looks like he's healthier, so it's very encouraging. I think you can fire him up in fantasy lineups now. That was a very disheartening start to the year, but he looks healthy and clearly, I mean, Trent Sherfield is now nowhere to be seen. They still have a question at quarterback. It was weird watching the crowd get so loud when Trey Lance came in the game. They had to put up on the screen the offense at work, quiet down. They were just, everyone was, yeah, I was at the game. Everyone stood up and cheered when poor Garoppolo ran off the field. It's, you almost feel bad for him. But, yes, I'm with you with Ayuk, especially George Kittle. He hurt his calf in that game, and he continues to miss practice. I think he's going to play, but he may not be looking at his normal targets. And the running back situation's a mess because Trey Sermon and or the blocking has not been nearly as good as expected, and Elijah Mitchell continues to miss practice with that shoulder injury. I think Mitchell's going to be the guy when he does return, but it may not be this week. So may rely on the pass more. I kind of like Ayuk and Samuel, and it's Shanahan's just sticking with Garoppolo for the foreseeable future, right or wrong. I know you said you – you're attracted to intelligent guys. But man, after watching my Shanahan, punt on fourth down to Aaron Rodgers, he's routinely ranks low in fourth down aggressiveness. That play at the end when they didn't run down the clock, you know, I don't know, man. Shanahan isn't quite so sexy after watching that performance on Sunday night.
You inferred that I was talking about Kyle Shanahan when in fact I meant Kyle Juszczyk, Harvard alum. Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah. He's getting there. He's like their lead back, man. He's seriously getting more care. That's an indictment on Trey Sermon there. But okay. So it was an exciting game though. And you know, man, Aaron Rodgers, as I said earlier, dude, what a performance. What a player. Pretty impressive.
Baltimore at Denver. This is an interesting game. To me, it's interesting that Denver is favorited in this one, I believe, by just 1 point. But that says a lot about what this team, the turnaround that they've been able to have over the past year. I think the biggest concern to everyone would be the backfield in Baltimore. You know, over the first 2 weeks, it looked like Tyson Williams was the answer. He looked great in terms of like running the ball, but he did miss a couple of assignments. His timing wasn't quite on par with Lamar's. And then last week, we saw him kind of get pushed to the side in favor of Latavius Murray. Honestly, though, neither of them, like, if we're going to be honest, the entire Baltimore offense was off against Detroit, right? I think there was a little bit of a like, this is after an emotional, you pointed out, an emotional win. Like, this is kind of was a little bit of a trap game for them. They thought it might have been a gimme. You saw Hollywood Brown drop 2, maybe 3 touchdowns, potential touchdowns in that one. So the matchup, though, is tough because Denver, even without Bradley Chubb, has been solid. So I think this one is going to be kind of a brawl. I like Lamar. I'll buy the dip on Hollywood to bounce back. You guys got to watch the receiving core though, because a lot of the younger receivers, Miles Boykin and the rookie they drafted, are being, I believe, activated back onto the squad now from IR, right?
Tyson Williams, just 1 touch in the first half last week. So if they can't get it done against the Lions, I'm not starting any fantasy back for Baltimore in Denver. I'm with you with Hollywood Brown. We'll bounce back. That was just crazy, man. I had a survivor, me and a co-manager do a really big buy-in, and he had us go with the Ravens in this game, and it was just a crazy roller coaster of emotions watching that one. Rashad Bateman should be stashed in benches. He's just activated off the IR. Man, Lamar Jackson's so good. But this is a tough matchup, you know, going to Denver. With some banged up offensive linemen, and he's missing practice with the hurt back. But man, so fun watching Lamar Jackson this year. I believe it's NFL's Greg Rosenthal said the stat. He leads the NFL in yards per completion and yards per rush. I mean, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I think he's proving himself. On the Denver side of things, they had another wide receiver injury, KJ Hamler on IR with the knee injury. So that means Judy is still out with the ankle, leaving Tim Patrick and Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant to lead the pass catchers. Baltimore's secondary has been banged up, and Teddy Bridgewater has been efficient. And so I think you're probably rolling with all three of those guys, but you're prioritizing Sutton and then probably Fant. And then lastly, Patrick, do you agree?
Yep, agree across the board there. Sutton, top 20 was fantasy wide receiver for me this week. Last week, the game script just didn't call for him. But the other game before, when Judy was out, he was the true number one receiver for them. So I really like Sutton in this matchup.
What about Williams and Gordon? They're always very closely ranked. It's very, very close timeshare. I have, since the start of the season, continuously ranked Gordon ahead of Williams. Do you see a shift happening anytime soon?
No, unless an injury strikes. I think it's going to be like 60-40 Gordon, and I rank him slightly higher too. Unfortunately, kind of cutting into each other's values.
All right, let's go to the Pittsburgh at Green Bay game. Woof, this probably won't be too much fun if you're a Steelers fan. The good news, however, though, is that Deontay Johnson did practice in full on Thursday. Juju Smith-Schuster was limited, Claypool limited, but at least the number one is back out there. I've gotten a lot of Claypool questions because of the, question marks about availability. I think if you're looking at Green Bay, like, I don't know, I'm not afraid of their secondary. I think Deontay, if he's healthy, could probably smash. I threw a dart at Freiermuth last week, and that seemed to work out. I think he's going to be another red zone option, particularly if, like, Juju isn't out there or Claypool isn't fully back to health yet. And otherwise it's Najee Harris. But I do still think that Claypool would be the wide receiver. I'm going to prioritize Claypool ahead of Juju, I guess is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, totally agree there. But I will say I'm less interested in Claypool and Najee, who combined for 34 targets last week, with the knowledge that Deontay Johnson returned to practice fully. So that hurts him a little bit. But yeah, Claypool, I mean, he's the touchdown guy. I like him way more than Juju. Far more fantasy upside, younger, and another you know, a level to grow to.
I get a ton of questions about Claypool and how people want to start. Maybe people want to start Juju ahead of Claypool because Juju feels like a safer option.
He is PPR, but yeah, no, he's banged up too, though. He left last week's game. They have to pay attention to all the receivers in Pittsburgh, and I don't know how much Big Ben has left in him, how many games he has left. I like the Packers at the stone minimum in Yahoo DFS, just $10, you know, nearly touchdown favorites at home. I know they don't have a very good real life defense, but man, Big Ben looks washed. I mean, it looks really, really ugly out there. So I like the Packers as the minimum price for DFS.
Why don't you take a belated victory lap on your boy MVS?
Yeah, he had a really, well, he left hurt, but yes, I was actually really close to where I was sitting. He caught that touch. He called it the greatest pass ever thrown to him, that pass that Rodgers threw. But yes, he finally cashed in some of those air yards for a score, but now he's sidelined with, I think he pulled his hammy or something. But yeah, you know, like MVS, you know, right when you're starting to get a little encouraged, it's another step back.
Hammies and ribs seem to be the theme heading out of week three. Let's talk about the Sunday night game. It's going to be a good one. We might as well call it the Brady Bowl. Tampa Bay at New England, the return of not just Tom Brady, but don't forget Rob Gronkowski. The Bucs are favored by 7 in this one. Oh, my goodness. Like, are we not just thinking that Tom Brady's going to go completely ham? Like, he's a top 5 quarterback. I don't care. Top 3. Like, this is it. Maybe this is it for me. Tom Brady, top 5 quarterback, hashtag peak Brady.
I have him as my QB3 this week. I hear you. I'm falling for the narrative too. I mean, I get it. Belichick knows like the offense and all that, but Brady's going to want to stick it to him. Antonio Brown's returning. I mean, they have such a better roster. Mac Jones just looks a little bit, you know, not quite ready. So I'm ready for Brady to just stick it to Belichick and go crazy. They're going to be throwing even if they have a 20-point lead in this game. So yeah, coming off a loss last week. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a nice performance. Brady, it's so funny that obviously the schedule makers looked ahead. This wasn't just a coincidence, but the fact he can break the record for most passing yards during his return to New England, it's almost too perfect. And you know, also another fun fact, this is the largest age difference between starting quarterbacks in NFL history, him and Mac.
Thank you for bringing that trivia. That is awesome. Let's give the Patriots a little bit of shine here. I do think Jacoby Myers will remain a nice high volume option. I like him. Obviously, the Bucs are dealing with some injury issues. They went and added Richard Sherman to the secondary. You mad, bro? I don't know.
I am mad because the Niners need help, and we love Sherman here. So I am mad that he didn't go back to San Francisco.
Well, I think there's other ish going on. He probably had to leave the West Coast for numerous reasons that aren't just on the field.
No, I know, but I'm saying Lynch and stuff love him and his family. I mean, there's a connection there too. I mean, like, we were supporting him like through this all. Like, I really, there was a close, you know, that was a consideration for sure, San Francisco, but yeah, the rich get richer in Tampa Bay.
And I also think that one of my sleepers this week is going to be Hunter Henry. I really like Hunter Henry this week. He is playing ahead of Jonnu Smith. And I think when, you know, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about the fact that James White isn't available, or the knee jerk plug and play simplistic fantasy analysis is that like, oh, JJ Taylor, I hear he's a pass catching back. Like, I don't know about that. I think that when we're looking at those short to mid yardage, short to mid range targets available, especially from a rookie quarterback who has limited mobility and frankly, limited arm strength, Hunter Henry has an opportunity now that he's past that shoulder injury to really do something and provide at least PPR value. So I think I think Hunter Henry is going to be a top, if I'm bullish, 10, if I'm bearish, 13 tight end this week.
Like Myers, and really like Henry's a great call because he really had far more routes than Johnny last week. And the pass funnel defense they're facing with Tampa Bay, who you cannot run against them. They're going to have to throw the ball more than they would like. Sticking with the James White injury ramifications. So instead of putting in fab bids for Josh Gordon, I was after Ramondre Stevenson. I know it's a long shot because, you know, he's been a healthy scratch the last couple of weeks, but he looks so good in the preseason. He's a better pass catcher than Damian Harris, my guy who just keeps missing blocking assignments. And he may be mothballed and put, I don't know, man. Belichick is not happy with Harris. So Ramondre Stevenson, deep sleeper, flyer to stash on your bench, could be a guy moving forward. What do you think?
Don't hate it. I love it. I featured him heading into the season. Take that advice. Go ahead and stash him before he's a thing. That's the job of fantasy manager. That's the job of fantasy analysts and fantasy managers. You got to stay ahead of the curve, not be reacting. But as Scott Pianowski says, what is it? Be proactive, not reactive. And on that note, we are going to proactively end the show because we've run out of games to preview. But if you want to keep chatting with us, we love that. And you can do it on Twitter. You can follow me at LizLoza_FF. You can follow Dalton at Dalton Del Don. And while you're there, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy, obviously. And stick around here, too, because Matt Harmon will be joined by TJ Hernandez tomorrow for a bonus Saturday DFS episode on this podcast feed. Until then, we're out. Good luck, and my apologies if you live in Boston.